WMFO Medford. Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to the Voicemobile at Tufts University, Medford, Mass. All right, so that was Melanie, and a little bit winded from climbing up the hill, but it'll be okay. I have quite a number of things to share with you, some new music, and this is an interesting thing. You know, people are having a lot of different feelings and discussions about the Trump administration. And his speech he opened up with last night, talking about the vandalism to Jewish graves and the bomb threats to JCCs around the country. And this is a note for a news brief from Minuta. So Jews supporting torched Tampa mosque, $18 at a time. It's dated February 28th. JTA, the Muslim man who started a crowdfunding page to help repair a mosque in Tampa damaged in an arson attack, realized that many of the donors were Jewish after noticing the gifts came in multiples of 18. Adil Karim set up the Stand with New Tampa Muslims Against Hate crowdfunding page on the Lunch Good website on February 24th, the day of the attack, in the wee hours of the morning. The fire was put out quickly, but the sprinkler system caused a great deal of water damage. Karim's campaign raised nearly $60,000 in less than a week, surpassing its $40,000 goal. I couldn't understand why people were donating in what seemed like weird amounts to the cause. There are sums of $18, $36, $72, etc. Then I figured out after clicking on the names, Avi, Cohen, Goldstein, Rubin, Fisher, Jews donate in multiples of 18 as a form of what is called chai, which means it wishes the recipient a long life, Karim wrote on Monday in a Facebook post. You learn something new every day. The Jewish faith has shown up in force to support our New Tampa Islamic community. I'm floored, the post continues. It concluded with the hashtag, Chai Delivered. The Islamic Society of New Tampa Mosque hosts interfaith events. A quote on its website reads, "Let us not forget that we are all members of the same human fraternity. Our differences are meant to be embraced. Our diversity should become our strength if we wholeheartedly commit ourselves to get to know each other, because as Allah has made clear, we are all descendants of one man and one woman." Earlier this month, a crowdfunding campaign launched by two Muslim Americans raised over $100,000 for a vandalized Jewish cemetery outside of St. Louis. So that was something quite positive. And there's another related article from the JCPA Media Update, which I'll share with you. And that was dated today from Washington. The ongoing bomb threats aimed at Jewish community centers, JCCs, have sown fear in more than 100 Jewish communities and institutions across the country. We call upon our public officials in both word and deed to do everything in their power to put a stop to these threats and incidents, stated David Bernstein, president and CEO of the Jewish Council for Public Affairs. We are heartened and appreciative that President Trump gave this issue top billing in his speech before Congress last night, stated Cheryl Fishbein, chair of the JCPA. We urge the president to continue to speak out against these threats against the Jewish community and other minority groups in a timely and decisive manner. Our public officials can create an environment in which such incidents are more or less likely to occur, stated Bernstein. The more our officials declare a commitment to an inclusive, bigotry-free society, the more likely radical elements will be kept in check. On Monday alone, more than 30 JCCs received bomb threats. A Jewish cemetery in Philadelphia was desecrated, and swastikas were found on playgrounds and sprayed on cars in several cities. For some of these JCCs, this was the fourth or fifth threat received by these institutions in the past couple of months. Since January, there have been 101 threats to the Jewish community, including bomb threats to Jewish community centers, day schools, and communal organizations. Shockingly, hate crimes against African Americans, Muslims, minorities, and immigrants topped 1,000 during the same period. In addition to issuing clear public statements, there is much work to be done. We urge the President, the Attorney General, and the FBI to spare no resources to investigate these new threats and bring the culprits to justice. We also call for implementation of the Anti-Defamation League's, the ADL's, anti-hate recommendations. Convene a federal interagency task force on fighting hate that brings together all the relevant agencies. Appoint a White House coordinator for fighting hate. Support federal and state-level legislation to protect students from increasing religious harassment and discrimination on college campuses. Train state and local law enforcement agencies led by the Department of Justice on how to handle hate crimes, including detection and response. We urge Jewish community institutions to reinforce a sense of safety and not allow these highly disruptive threats to deter participation in Jewish life. So, there you have it. It's a very troubling thing that's happening, and we need to do everything we can to, to combat it, essentially. So I have other things to share with you, but I think I'll pull out some of the new music that I brought for us, of which I have quite a lot. But I bet you, I didn't have a chance to open any of these up. Okay, we have one. Well, we can get this one right in there, which hopefully had trouble with one of these discs last week. Hopefully that won't happen again. One of these players, that seems to be feeding in nicely. So, well, let's see. All right, well, we'll have a listen to the very first cut on this. Oh, and of course, I thought this was set up, and it's not. Ah! Okay, see if we can get this back like it's supposed to be. Default. Okay. There we go. Now we're ready to roll. I'm
Life is like a song to sing with measures, beats, and phrases with bending notes and some repeats. Music through the ages that brings the highs, the lows, the swells. Sometimes it's for an ending, bringing other songs to sing, ascending, descending. I'm learning how to listen, how to hear a melody, how to hear the song that I'm singing, how to just feel and let it be. Listen to the song and knowing how it goes, and listen for the melody that flows. Music is a lover, it's shiny, golden wings, whispers in the lover's ear, dances when she sings, sends a variation on an everlasting theme. It is either love or sorrow on the scene. I'm learning how to listen for the songs I name and sign, claim as a possession, and say that is mine. Cause everybody knows that songs come from out of the blue, and I'm learning how to hear the changes too. Listen to the rhythm of the night, how to keep it simple, how to make it sweet and light, smooth and free and easy, or just slamming in a jam. And no, for just a moment, it is music that I am. the melody that flows, and listen for the melody that
It's 3:30 here at Tufts University, WMFO Medford, and you're listening to The Voice Mobile. I'm your host, Joyce The Voice. We're listening to some new jazz, and I'll give you the information of what we've been listening to, some new music out of the folks at Kate Smith Promotions, and some very nice things so far. So we're going to continue on with another new offering.
Thank you.
Okay, we've just been listening to amazing, beautiful pianist Satoko Fuji. It's her first live solo recording, very introspective, recorded in concert at the Intimate Cortez Jazz Club in Mito, Japan. Satoko Fuji is one of the most original pianists in free jazz. Steve Greenlee from the Boston Globe made that comment. There is beauty in these melodies, there is purpose in the rhythms, and there are moments of sheer playfulness. Richard Kamens from Step Tempest, and that became available February 10th on Cortez Sound. It's a double CD, and you know, she's a prolific composer and band leader. She is rarely recorded as a soloist. After more than 25 years on the international jazz scene, during which she has recorded 79 CDs as a leader, co-leader, or sideman, this is only her fourth solo album. Just beautiful. Absolutely beautiful. We'll be hearing more about that. And prior to that, I played a new CD. This is today, it's first day that it's being added. Jim Buening. It's B-U-E-N-N-I-N-G, and it's the CD is called It's Like This, and this was recorded in December of 2016, and the release date is today, so you're hearing it probably first here. His influences include Kenny Garrett, Jackie McLean, Cannonball Adderley, Joe Henderson, Herbie Hancock, Miles Davis, Wayne Shorter, and Tom Harrell. He and his groups perform extensively throughout the Midwest and have been invited to perform at the Iowa City Jazz Festival and Bix Beiderbecke Memorial Jazz Festival. I thought there was more, but I guess that's all there is on that. Okay, so this is kind of an important communication from the Ruderman Family Foundation. Mr. Jay Ruderman was my guest a while back here on the Voicemobile. Their motto is including each and strengthening all. Today we mark the Disability Day of Mourning. Our just released Ruderman white paper reveals the shocking finding that at least once a week, a person with a disability is murdered by their caregiver. Now, they have a podcast and with the white paper and author David Perry. You can also read the podcast transcript and the white paper. If you go to the Ruderman Family Foundation, you'll find these. It says, we have found that when these murders are covered, they are often called, quote-unquote, mercy killings, which perpetuates the stigma and myth that the life of a person with a disability is not worth living, and that it is a kind deed to end such a life. Such coverage simply must stop. It is dehumanizing and dangerously continues to stigmatize disability. We found that the voices of the victims are nearly always erased to favor the perspectives of the perpetrators. This too must stop. In this white paper, we offer insight into a difficult phenomenon and offer resources and best practices to stop the stigmatization of disability. It's really shocking, actually. But, you know, this is what, it wasn't mercy killings, but this is unfortunately what the Nazis did, too. So, Oh, I see. I wanted to put this out on Facebook, but I'll do that in just a minute. So let me continue on and share with you what other music we had been listening to. I'll start from the beginning of the show. We had a new release, also probably the first time it's being played in this area. Doug Monroe and La Pompe Attacked. The Harry... actually, that wasn't the first one. Let me make sure what... I had first, no, it was Howard Johnson and Gravity was the very first one. And it's from a CD called Testimony. We heard the title cut. It says this 1990 Howard Johnson original is a cooker that testifies to the power and versatility of the tuba and puts the listener on notice as to what's to come. He's internationally acclaimed multi-instrumentalist and veteran sideman. Howard Johnson takes a turn in the spotlight with a new release, Testimony, recorded with his 10-piece tuba choir, Gravity. Testimony includes 8 tunes ranging from soulful to funky to bluesy to cookers. Gravity's take on Johnson's originals, as well as compositions by McCoy Tyner, Carole King, and others, testifies to the range and versatility of the tuba. So this is also a March 1st release. And he arrived in New York City in the 60s, appeared with Jack DeJohnette, Abdullah Ibrahim, Lou Rawls, Lee Morgan, Chick Corea, John Lennon, The Band, Paul Simon, Tony Williams, Pharoah Saunders, Hank Mobley, the Saturday Night Live Band, Gatto Barbieri, Lee Van Helm, and literally hundreds of others. Well, he's certainly gotten himself out there. So there are lots of folks on this CD, including Dave Bergeron on tuba, Velvet Brown also on tuba. He's a Penn State professor of tuba and euphonium, and he's also with the St. Louis Symphony and several other orchestras. Joseph Daly, also on tuba, is a producer of Testimony and the mainstay of New York's adventurous music scene. Carlton Holmes on keyboards, Nedra Johnson on tuba and vocals, and Earl McIntyre on tuba, renowned educator, Brooklyn Philharmonic guest conductor. He's been an alumnus of bands fronted by Charles Mingus, Miles Davis, Cecil Taylor, Lester Bowie, McCoy Tyner, and others. Very interesting. Howard Johnson and Gravity. All right, and then the next thing I played was also a new release, Doug Monroe and the Lump Pump Attack, the Harry Warren Songbook. And we heard, what did I play? I played Lullaby of Broadway. That's a Harry Warren L. Dubin composition. He said, Harry Warren was my great uncle on my father's side of the family. My great grandparents were Leon Charles Monroe and his wife, Mammy, or May, as my grandfather called her. May's maiden name was Guranjana. I don't know how to say that. Her parents were Antonio and Rachel DeLucia Guaranja. They changed their last name to Warren after coming to America. I can see why. Harry was one of May's brothers. I never got the chance to meet Harry in person, but my grandfather often talked about him. I knew I wanted to do a project celebrating his music. Harry Warren was the first major American song composer to write primarily for film. Every song on this CD is from a movie except for 2 songs I wrote. All these songs are arranged in the hot swing style made popular by the great guitarist Django Reinhardt and violinist Stephanie Grappelli in the Hot Club de Paris. Main body of work from Django Reinhardt is from the same period. So this is a very interesting project. I liked it very much. Okay, and then we heard from Virginia Shenick. This was a tribute, an Abby Lincoln tribute. And we heard Learning How to Listen. It was very beautiful. We have Virginia Shenick on vocals, Kevin Bales on piano, Rodney Jordan on bass, Marlon Patton on drums, and special guest Kebby Williams on alto sax. So all of these offerings, except for the Satoko, are from the Kate Smith Promotions, thanks to those folks. And the piano CD, Satoko Fuji's first live solo recording, is from the folks at Braithwaite and Katz Communications, so thanks to them. All right, so let's see. I wanted to share something wonderful. I think it's absolutely wonderful. Science brings good old flavor back to tomatoes. Ha! We need that for sure. So this is by Israel 21 Century, 21C. And supermarket tomatoes often look a lot better than they taste. That is so true. That's because modern commercial tomatoes have gradually lost their flavor as breeders tinker with their shelf life, firmness, and disease resistance. Now it seems that we can have our tomato and eat it too. Now, I will say, if you get your tomatoes from the farmer's market, that's a different story because those do have good flavor. So after a decade of research, a global team of scientists from Israel, the United States, China, and Spain have identified the flavor components that contribute to the delicious taste of tomatoes and the genes that code for the tomato's flavor-enhancing chemicals. Their study, published January 27th in the journal Science, has made it possible to produce tomatoes with their good old flavor without sacrificing the traits that make them attractive to consumers and longer lasting for shipment around the world. To start the research, the Faculty of Agriculture of the Hebrew University of Jerusalem contributed 398 tomato varieties from the laboratory of Professor Danny Zamir at the Institute of Plant Sciences and Genetics in Agriculture. The varieties, including modern, heirloom, and wild relatives of the cultivated tomatoes, were chosen from a collection of some 8,000 tomato that we keep in a seed bank at the lab, said Zamir's doctoral student, Itai Zemach. Tomato fruit samples grown in Israel were sent to all participating research groups, each identifying different components. In Israel, doctoral student Yosef Fisher measured and analyzed sugar content, weight, size, and color. Researchers in Spain checked for volatile compounds responsible for tomato aroma. American researchers conducted a taste test to rate the tomato varieties according to their flavor and other traits. And in China, researchers sequenced and analyzed the genomes of the various varieties. Through analysis of the chemistry of the tomatoes, researchers identified 13 compounds associated with good flavor. They determined that modern tomatoes lack sufficient sugars and volatile chemicals critical to better flavor, lost through 50 years of focus on other traits. The research showed a positive correlation between sugar level and taste in the tomato varieties we've examined. Tasters ranked varieties with high sugar levels as more delicious, and the gene screening showed that the main gene that differs in flavor-enhanced tomatoes is the one that increases sugar level, explains Zemach. How interesting. To study how to enhance the flavor in modern tomatoes, they study gene variants called alleles, A-L-L-E-L-E-S, A-L-L-E-L-E-S. I don't know quite how to say that. And we're able to identify the locations of the quote-unquote good alleles in the tomato genome that allow the production of compounds contributing to tastier tomatoes. After mapping genes that control synthesis of all the important chemicals, the researchers used genetic analysis to replace bad alleles in modern tomato varieties with the good alleles. We identified the important factors that have been lost and showed how to move them back into the modern types of tomatoes. Hurrah, said Professor Harry Klee from the University of Florida's Institute of Food and Agricultural Sciences, who led the international study, stressing that this technique involves classical genetics, not genetic modification. Good. We're just fixing what has been damaged over the last half century to push them back to where they were a century ago, taste-wise. We can make the supermarket tomato taste noticeably better. Zemach said that the results of the study have already been implemented in the breeding programs of Zamir's lab. It's looking possible to breed for tastier tomatoes with other excellent quality characteristics, he said. That's from the folks at Israel 21C or 21century.org. Marvelous. I'm excited because, you know, the other thing that they need to do is to find out what's happening with the lack of smell or scent in the flowers that you get. That I don't know if it's because they're not being fertilized by bees or what the story is, but that is a problem. So, let's see. I got that. Well, what's next? What's next here? We're going to go back to some music. And I believe, yeah, it's this one. Okay, good.